Welcome to Jaguars This Week,
presented by Aetna,
live from Latitude 30.
Jaguars This Week,
with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who?
Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
Right across from the Avenues Mall, we're here every Wednesday during the regular season with you to talk about the Jaguars' previous game, because we have to this week. And look forward to the Bears on Sunday. Should be a lively program. You could join us a lot of different ways. First of all, the phone line, 800-355-6351 or 355-NFL1. If you're here in Jacksonville, lovely Linda's back in the studio. She'll pass your calls along to us. Also, Twitter is available, at John Osher, at Tony Boselli, at Jags Voice. For Lagerman, you got a call. So if you want to talk to Jeff?
The best way is to come on by Latitude 30.
See you in person.
Then we can actually talk, you know.
Did anybody ever tell you that there actually is a Jeff Lagerman on Twitter? It's just not you, obviously. It's some guy in West Virginia. And somebody was saying, you got to get every week. These guys get it too. When's Jeff going to get on Twitter? When's Jeff going to get on Twitter? And a guy popped back and said, I am on Twitter. It's just not who you think it is. So
follow him.
Yeah, right.
I like that guy.
Yeah, who knows?
So
who knows from where
there,
he is?
He's saying he doesn't like
couch.
You.
I remember there was a guy by the name of J.B. Lagerman that played football in West Virginia. Is that the guy?
I don't know, but I'll find him on Twitter and see if maybe you know
okay.
him.
All
so
right.
we'll roll with it on that.
Maybe it's like a second cousin.
Maybe we're related, you know.
West Virginia.
Well, in West Virginia, that's a big question mark. Trust me, having grown up in that little piece of Virginia that juts right up into Maryland and West Virginia, by God.
You know it all.
West Virginia, there's a lot of cousins in West Virginia.
All right, folks, so if anybody from West Virginia happens to be in the audience this evening, take it all with a grain of salt. We're here again until 8 o'clock. Jaguars and Bengals behind us, Jaguars and Bears in front. Where do you guys want to start this evening?
Oh, let's talk about the Bengals.
All right, here we go.
No, I mean, obviously not much to say. I mean, but...
Oh, there's a lot to say.
I was going to say, I got a
What are you talking about?
List. Not very positive,
okay.
But...
Okay, here's what I meant.
Go ahead, John.
You
go ahead and say
this.
What little you were going to say.
It was bad.
That's all really you got?
Bad. Well, I mean...
That's great radio.
Probably need a specific topic.
It is Wednesday.
Well, I'll start here.
I'm kind of worn out. I've been talking about it all week.
Oh, the 24-hour rule applies to Osh, too, now. He's got to move on. He's got stories to write.
If only I could get the readers to obey the 24-hour rule.
Yeah, but the fans aren't. I mean, and rightfully so.
Nor should they.
Nor should they. That's two home games and two performances that have been below par.
37 points.
37-point difference. And you look at the Bengals game on Sunday, and it's a game that is 10. It's 7-3, a fake punt. Makes it basically 10-7, very poorly run, poorly executed. We were completely outflanked from the beginning. We can get into that more as we go on. But the big story to me is we were utterly dominated on both lines of scrimmages, and that's why we won. Everyone wants to focus on A.J. Green and Andy Dalton and what a great pass combination that is. And I've heard so many people get on Rasheen Mathis, who I actually – did not think played that poorly at all.
No.
Yes, AJ had some big days. He does that against a lot of people. I don't know why we didn't have safety over the top help. Again, that's another story we can talk about tonight. But the reason we lost the game is because we were dominated on both lines of scrimmage.
And that's what's most concerning to people who write me each week, is that it looks so dominant most weeks that these lines are getting outplayed. And that's what's concerning.
Let me just add this, though. I think they were the defensive line was not very good, and I don't think they've been very good the last couple weeks, in which they should have been better. Offensively, I thought Cameron Bradfield played pretty well.
Jeff, we were dominated on both offensive. I'm not talking about – we can get into individual play.
No,
we
no,
were
I,
dominated
I
on both lines of scrimmage.
I know, but the big cause of it in that first half was Evan struggling coming back and dealing with Geno Atkins. That was a big part of it.
I disagree.
And then some miscommunication up in the middle with Brad and the interior guys, and certainly that happened in the second half. But, you know, I'm not going to be the sky is falling. They're all bad.
Oh, I don't think that either. I mean, I think our left tackle is a very good player. I think Eugene Monroe is a very good player. He played well again on Sunday afternoon. I think he is having a good year. I mean, obviously he can get better, and there's nuances of the game. But overall, I think Cameron Bradfield is an ascending player, a guy who has a lot of ability and talent. He's young. He needs reps. He needs time out there. He's playing against some very good defensive ends in Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson, mainly Dunlap. But if you look at the overall giving up six sacks, not being able to run the ball against the second to worst rush defense in the football. They're giving up 6 yards per carry between the tackles coming into that game, and we did not control the line of scrimmage at all.
Pizza.
And we can go
by
down.
By the way, my pizza just came. Mind you, that here at 2:30.
See, there's a problem now, because if yours had just arrived, Tony could keep talking while you ate.
Right. But that's a good point.
Now Ocean and I got to keep this one alive.
But I think you'd agree, Jeff, and I don't think it was just Abbott. I think we struggled on the interior of our offensive line.
Let me ask you, let's start with it from the left guard spot, because
let me just say this, Brian, because, you know, I mean, you could analyze it position by position, you know, but the one thing is if you look at this group and you look at it individually, personnel breakdown, and you evaluate each position, this team is better than so many of the other teams that they're going up against personnel-wise, in my opinion, that the performance should be better. Should be better, period.
Now, I think that's what's irritating to fans is they keep hearing it. I keep writing it. I believe it as well. And yet you don't see it.
And sooner or later, you are what you put on the tape. And so, Jeff, I would agree with you, and I thought coming into this season, I said it multiple times that this offensive line was going to be a strength, that when our five guys were out there, that I felt very good about the offensive line and what they were able to do this year.
Even with the injuries and the guys that were missing.
But sooner or later,
that should be the case.
What you put on tape,
I agree,
is what you are.
I agree, but I'm not ready to jump off of that.
I'm not either. Listen, we have 12 more games. I mean, we got to get better.
All right, well, then let's deal with it this way. The left guard spot is obviously the greatest concern. Am I right on that?
You know, and I'm not that concerned about it.
Okay.
You know, I'm really not. I mean, Evan Britton had a bad game. He had a bad game coming back from injury against the best interior pass rusher in the National Football League and Geno Atkins. That can happen. Was Eben back maybe a little too quickly? I mean, looking at the performance, yeah. You know, I think, you know, and hey, Eben Britton's a good football player. And anybody thinks that Eben Britton is not a good football player is crazy. Hey, Pig Boy, can you hold the microphone while you're trying to
eat
the
pizza? Sorry, I burned my mouth. I almost
that's hot. Terrible.
Hot out of the wood fired Eben over here.
That's a new standard right there.
We all know that Eben Britton is a good football player, and good football players can have bad days.
So what you're saying is he can play better when he's healthy.
Absolutely.
And you're not worried about left guard. So let's move on real quick then. Is Brad Meester an issue at center? In the middle.
I think Brad needs to be better. You know, I think Brad needs to be better. I think Uche needs to be better. You know, one of my comments this week was, you know, because I got questions this week, and they're like, what is wrong with our offense? What is wrong with our defense? And my comments about the offense is, you know, if I were a coach, I'd love to buy, you know, those little handheld mirrors that John Osher wears to put on makeup for all the Jaguars.com broadcasts. And I mentioned this today at Jaguars Insider, which is, by the way, available at Jaguars.com. Thank you, Linda.
She's good.
Is that, you know, I would love to buy every offensive player a little handheld like that and say, herein lies the problem. Look at the mirror, and you will see where we need to get better. Now, I think everybody can get better as an offense. You know, and it's every guy across the board on the offensive line. The quarterback can be better by having patience and then sometimes being quicker decision-making-wise. The wide receivers can get better separation. The backs can do a better job catching the ball, cleaner out of the backfield. Just across the board, everybody can be better.
I agree with you, but that doesn't change the fact that against Houston, we were dominated on both lines of scrimmage. Against the Bengals, we were dominated on both lines of scrimmages. And so we can go down the personnel, each position, and say – of what we believe they can be and how we feel about them. And listen, I mean, there's nobody here, as far as an offensive lineman, that wants these guys to succeed and thinks and thought highly of this group coming into the season. For whatever reason, we're not performing at that level.
Let me ask you this, Tony. I've always had a theory, and it's from watching the NFL and talking to guys, that it's easier if you've got guys who are struggling, that it's easier to fix pass protection than to get significantly better running the ball. Is that right? I mean, is that right? Would you say that's true?
I don't know if I agree with that, because I always think that when you're struggling offensively, let's try to be physical, and the way you can be physical is running the ball and to slow down the pass rush where we're struggling. We're struggling pass blocking.
So I'm wrong is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, I think you can improve on either. I mean, a lot. If you're talking about pass blocking from the sense of a lot of it's a technique base, so if right. you improve your technique, you can improve there. Right. Absolutely. And so, but
and communication.
And communication and making sure guys are going the right. And so you can shore up through schemes what you're talking about. Absolutely, I agree with you, in the pass. And plug some holes in that area. As when an offensive line, as far as in a game, is struggling passing the ball, then you have to let's get it on the ground, let's be physical,
all right.
slow down this pass rush, play action pass, you know, make it a little bit easier if the guys up front are struggling.
So what do you do this week if you're Andy Heck with this group facing a Chicago front that's pretty darn good?
After I got done screaming at him?
Yeah, I don't know that Andy would scream, but you would.
Well, you asked me what I would do.
What would you do? You go Mike Mazur on him.
I mean, that's how I got – that's what happened when we got done at – trust me, I've been – it's so – just so no.
You've been there. That's why I'm asking.
I've been there. I've been on an offensive line that got beat up, and we didn't play well. And it is a embarrassing, humiliating time because you understand we – as an offensive line and as an offensive lineman, you take pride that that's the foundation where things get started. And if you can't do that, you can't win. You got to go back – you go back to the basics. I'll say from a personal standpoint, whenever I struggled in the game – starting in college all the way through the pros, if I struggled, I went back to the basics of what my technique was. And literally the rudimental, the getting lined up, getting in a stance, sets. That's not even a word, I know.
John got a quizzical look.
I was waiting for John to chime in.
I made that word. That's one of my – it's a made-up word.
But it sounded
the
good enough.
The rudiments.
It sounded good enough.
Sounds like a band.
I didn't quite want to call you on it.
Yeah, Johnny, load him a word there real quick, will you?
The fundamentals. Is that better? Fundamentals.
A little better. Rudimentary fundamentals.
Yeah, I mixed the two is what I did.
Right.
And I had – the good news is it was such a – John thought it was the right word for a second because, you know, it's such a big word that might work.
It should be a word.
I'm over here looking at John, and he's got this look on his face. I'm like, no, it's not a word.
Yeah, it's not a word. It's not.
All right, hey, we got a break, which means Joe gets the microphone.
Real quick, just go to the foundations and start there is where I go.
How about this? When you're looking for a department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart, 6 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. Come see us at Latitude 30. You can actually see a guy named Baselli eat pizza with a fork. I don't get it. It's hot. All right. Jaguars This Week, presented by Etta, is live at Latitude 30. We'll continue on Jaguars Radio. Well, how's some extra cash sound? Season ticket owners, the Jaguars Refer-A-Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. If you need more information or join the Refer-A-Fan program, just call the Jaguars ticket office, 904-633-2000, or visit jaguars.com.
Joe Fortunato, Jacksonville's own Don Pardo. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. Welcome back to Latitude 30. We are live with Jaguars This Week, sitting out enjoying some of the atmosphere and the food during the break. You can join us every single Wednesday night right across from the Avenues Mall. Whether you're coming to bowl or play the games or eat the food or watch the movies, hang out with us on Wednesday nights. All right, you got a Twitter question.
Before we go to your Twitter question.
Yeah.
Back to what we were talking about, the lines of scrimmage. And, Jeff, I mean, would you agree that for this team to be better, and let's just stay off that. We'll do one at a time, but offense first. For this team, for the passing attack, for this team to be successful long-term, or even this week, let's just start this week, the offense line has to play better. And then on the flip side, the defensive line, those two units have to play better if this team wants to win.
Yeah, I mean both sides. I mean, it starts up front. But still, I mean, there are other areas that need to get better.
I'm not saying there's not other areas, but that's that's the start. I mean, if we don't get that fixed, if that is not better, look at the offense.
That's why they're not competitive.
Look at the offense. So you look at the offense, and everyone is talking about Blaine is and how bad Blaine is, and I mean, it's like a broken record. Blaine is only going to have an opportunity if there's time to throw the ball, if he's comfortable in the pocket, if there's room. Do the receivers need to get open more and create more separation? Yes. They need to play better without a doubt, but I'd argue part of it is if you look at the game, so much of it is get rid of the ball quick that the defenses are sitting on routes.
Right.
But you have to push stuff down the field.
Yeah, they can't do that right now.
Well, and there's not time to do that, Jeff.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's why they can't do it.
So if you want the passing game to get better, Blaine needs to play better. He has to progress as a quarterback. There's not a doubt. Our receivers need to create more separation. They need to win the one-on-one battles. But before any of that, that offensive line, and as an ex-offensive line, it pains me to say it, that is the group that has to play better.
Did you see the Baptist Health Smart Board Monday night on Jaguars All Access?
I did not.
I'm trying to plug everything here.
That's on Jaguars.com, right?
It is available on Jaguars.com, but I showed that three plays offensively of immediate pressure in Blaine Gabbert's face. And I'm talking immediate.
First play of the game.
I mean immediate. You know, Geno Atkins, you know, multiple times, and then you had an unblocked linebacker in Vontaze Burfict, I mean, in his face immediately. There's not a quarterback in the world that can function having that type of pressure that quickly in front of you, and especially a young quarterback.
I kind of use the analogy, you know, say realistically right now, Blaine, if everything was perfect around Blaine, he would probably be somewhere, say, between 14 and 20 in terms of quarterbacks in the NFL. High end right now because he's developing. The receivers may be around the same spot. But without time, they can't even come close to being that good. Without time, those guys are in the bottom two or three. So they're not even getting a chance. They're probably not elite yet, either of those groups. But they're not even getting a chance to be as good as they could possibly be.
I'm going to hold off on the Twitter question. Let's stay with this for just a minute. Laurent Robinson, not likely to play this week. Don't know how long it will take him to get back after suffering a third concussion. So
weeks.
Yeah, probably. So how does that set the passing attack back? They gave him $7 million a year. He's supposed to be the vertical element to that offense. Who gets that role now? How do you not regress from a receiver perspective without Laurent Robinson?
Somebody's got to fill the role.
Is that Cecil?
Well, whether it be Cecil Shorts or Mike Thomas, I mean, somebody's got to fill that role. You know, the thing, though, that I'm curious about, and that in both games that Laurent Robinson had went out with the injury, he was replaced both times by Kevin Elliott. You know, why not Mike Thomas? Why not Cecil Shorts? I mean, I like Kevin Elliott, you know, physical player, but and I like him as a guy that I think has got a good future. But I want somebody on the field who's shown the ability to catch the ball a little bit better and somebody that has more vertical speed than Kevin. I think Kevin's got good speed, but I think Cecil Shorts has better speed, as we saw certainly against Minnesota and Indianapolis.
And he's certainly a polished route runner and gives you that element.
And I know and he played well outside at times in the preseason.
Well, and I know we're talking about two different positions here, though. You know, Cecil's been playing the Z.
Over behind Blackman.
And Mike Thomas has been playing the Z and the slot. You know, Laurent is an X, okay? Well, and I know that they're young. You know, you've got a young group, and so you probably haven't cross-trained a lot of them yet. It's time to cross-train.
Can you do that in a week? I mean, Cecil's a bright
guy.
You've
got a choice now.
Right.
I mean, you don't have a choice. I mean.
Well, the choice, I guess, would be Kevin Elliott instead of Cecil.
I don't proclaim to be a wide receiver expert, but I mean, how different can it be between X and Z? And I know you've got motions
right,
and you've got alignments and
it's
all
formation.
Of that. You know, I understand that part of it, but it's still playing wide receiver.
And again, you know, a theme so far has been why the fans are frustrated. Fans realistically see other teams have guys go down and come in, and it's not a huge issue. And that's what's gotten tiresome, is it's always that, well, you know, there was this excuse, there was this reason, well, there was this reason. People are tired of it. They want to see performance.
I think what you're saying, I mean, forget it's the excuse part that people are tired about, in the sense of this is the reason we're not winning or this is the reason we're not
right.
performing. And it's like, listen.
At some points, like Mike Morgan said, guys have to,
you
make,
have to make plays.
And make things happen. Make things happen for you rather than just sort of waiting.
All right, we've reached the bottom of the hour. It's time for Joe Fortunato to make it happen, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Brian Sexton. At Sonny's, you get a heaping helping of baby back ribs, plus two of your favorite sidekicks, and garlic bread or cornbread. Order for only $12.99. And if you want it all you can eat, just add $4. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is live at Latitude 30. We're here till 8 o'clock. Come on by, say hi. The show will continue right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, you need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. It's true. Really, Brian? And the 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealers today, proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You know, I think we all agree we have a wonderful waitress tonight in Allie.
Absolutely.
Here at Latitude 30. And Allie told me during the break that we got phone calls already.
About what? What did you say?
Here to Latitude 30, and that I was offensive to West Virginians.
I was offended.
You were?
Absolutely.
You know, let me say this.
I don't even have anyone from West Virginia, and I was offended.
You know, Virginians and West Virginians always have that ability to go back and forth.
Sure.
I'm from Virginia. And much like Texans and Oklahomans, much like Kentuckians and Tennesseans.
Kansas and Missourians.
Florida and Georgians.
And if, you know, I think it represents the state of West Virginia very poorly when you call in and react such as you did. To call in and say,
what happened?
Oh, we've got season tickets to the Jaguars. We take offense that you've offended the state of West Virginia.
What'd you say that was so offensive?
There's a lot of cousins in West Virginia.
That's not funny.
Just you say as you laugh.
That's not funny. That's offensive.
Let me read the injury report.
You
see, are
you
what
offended,
you think of this.
I'm just, you know what I'm saying? What I'm saying is, if you can't understand it.
It was a joke.
Get a life.
All right, so is Allie our complaint line? Is that it
yes.
now?
Yes, call Allie if
What's
you have any
complaints.
She's the pulse
What's
of
What's your
the
mobile
listeners?
Number? Well, people can text you. You don't want to give that up yet. There you
hey,
go.
Hey, Allie, just if they call back again, tell them to take a joke.
Well, and here's the deal. If you're going to call Latitude 30 to complain about the show.
I feel like being Roy D. Mercer right now. By God.
Ask for Allie. She'll come to the phone and take the complaint. She'll probably hang up on you. She's a big fan of Loggemans. Okay, so here we go. Here is the injury report today. And Tyson Alualu and Brad Meester and LaRon Robinson and Daryl Smith did not participate. The first two, Alualu and Meester, not injury-related. They get Wednesdays off. The concussion we've mentioned with Robinson, Daryl Smith. We know about the groin. Hopefully after the bye week is what we're hearing. George Selby practiced some today in a limited fashion. For the Bears, tight end Evan Rodriguez did not participate with a knee. Wide receiver Earl Bennett was limited with a hand. Running back Matt Forte was limited with an ankle, as was defensive end Julius Peppers. And by the way, Forte and Peppers both played on Monday night against the Cowboys, so it figures they're going to get a little time off this week.
Julius Peppers is an older player. In a short week, you're going to limit him. Matt Forte had a high ankle sprain and missed a game a couple weeks ago, and so you would expect him to be kind of taken care of during a short week. So when you're talking about a short week, such as the Bears have, you know, I don't read anything into their injury report until you get to – the actual time when they have to say questionable, probable, or doubtful.
Friday.
Exactly.
Friday afternoon. All right, so here's the Twitter that I got. And again, if you'd like to join us, you can tweet at Jags Voice, at John Osher, at Tony Baselli. And this one is, if Derek Cox is playing so great, why wasn't he covering A.J. Green?
Well, he was when A.J. Green lined up to his side. You know, and he covered him pretty well. I think A.J. had one catch on the side of Derek Cox throughout the game, but Derek played him very well. And Rasheen had three plays that, you know, he'd like to have back. I thought two of them he was in great position. One of them he could have done a lot better. But, you know, folks, I mean, A.J. Green is a great player. I wish that Rasheen had some help over the top, but you can't help a corner all the time.
Well, part of the problem with that, Jeff, is what you'd like to be able to do against the Bengals is run a lot of two-man, we were playing man underneath and the safety over the top help. But we weren't getting any pressure with four guys, so Mel Tucker, to get pressure, was sending five and six, which then puts you in single high safety looks where your corners are outside, basically in man-to-man coverage. And on the one where Rasheen got beat off the line of scrimmage, it led to a touchdown in the south end zone. I believe it was Dwan Landry or maybe Dwight Lowry trying to get over there.
It was Dwight, but it was too far.
It was too far of a run because he was playing center field, which he had to. So
that's the one that Rasheen, I think, would like to have.
He got beat off, he tried to jam A.J. and he got beat off the line of scrimmage and missed. I mean, it happens.
He went to the inside and A.J. Green went to the outside, and the ball was thrown right on time. And
it was a great throw, great
play.
No
chance for the rush to make an impact on that play.
No, it was not.
No chance for Dwight Lowry to get over and make a play because Rasheen missed the jam.
And so to answer the question, why did they not mirror Derek Cox? I think it's a legitimate question. It could have been a strategy if that's what you approached it. But the Jaguars play left and right corners.
They have not always done that.
No, I know, but they did that game.
In that game, they played left and right. And I think when you've got a guy like Derek Cox and Rasheen that are both coming back from injury, Rasheen coming back from an ACL reconstruction, Derek coming back from the hamstring in the preseason, I think what you want to do is allow them to be comfortable. I don't think they're advanced far enough, you know, health-wise to say, okay, we're going to flip-flop these guys and put, you know, Derek against our best guy, Rasheen against that guy. And you know what? Hey, Rasheen Mathis has played pretty doggone good considering, and he's come back from a major knee operation at an advanced age. I don't want to say as an old man because he's not quite an old man yet, but, I mean, he's not a young man anymore.
10 years in the league, so.
You know, and we're talking, he's not even, what is he, 10 and a half months maybe?
Yeah, right at 10 and a half.
Yeah, I mean, 10 and a half months, I mean, that's he's doing really well for 10 and a half months.
All right, would you consider this week with Brandon Marshall coming in, averaging 15 yards per reception, another one of those 6'5" guys with long arms and makes plays down the field, would you consider flopping your corners this week? Or is that still not what you want to do with these guys?
Well, they play Brandon all over. So it's kind of hard to zero in. Could you have a guy follow him? Yeah, but that means you're playing a lot of man. You know, I don't think you really want to necessarily play a lot of man against him. You know, he's not the only concern with the Bears. Alshon Jeffrey, watching the film today, Alshon Jeffrey.
The rookie from South Carolina.
Big wide receiver, and I'm not saying he's phenomenal, although he does lead the NFL rookies in receiving yards. But they take a ton of shots where even if he's covered and if he's got man, Jay Cutler's going to throw to him. And Jeffrey, what's he, like 6'3"?
6'4".
Got pretty good vertical. I mean,
and he had Devin Hester as well.
He has some ability to go up and get it. Devin Hester, to me, is a wide receiver, you know.
Yeah, but he's a deep threat. I mean, they hit him over the top one time against Dallas.
One time against Dallas.
And they're going to run a – I guarantee they'll run a –
scare me, though.
They'll run a couple bubble screens to him.
Bubble screens, and they do the little flip reverse, and then they do a little swing pass.
But the bigger problem – to me, the bigger problem is not the coverage and worrying about Rasheen and Derek Cox. I think Derek Cox is playing better right now, so if you wanted to mirror him on Brandon Marshall, I'm sure it's a – I mean, I'll leave that to the – that type of strategy to Mel Tucker and his staff. My concern is if you don't get pressure on Jay Cutler, he's going to tear you apart.
You know what? We've hit the quarter post here. Let's take the break and come back, and let's go right into that, Logs, because I know you have some distinct thoughts on it. You're listening to Jaguars This Week live from Latitude 30 on Jacksonville's south side, right across from the Avenues Mall. Starting to fill up here on a Wednesday night, folks. Come on by. I think we can all attest the pizza's pretty good. So we'll throw it to Joe.
Thank you, Brian. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, know more, get better. You'll know more and get better about the Jaguars during Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30 on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. The Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30. This portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Football Fanatics.
You know, Logs, before we talk about the pass rush, I got this cat that's been tweeting me for a couple of days with the same stat. So I'll give it to you. And this is from some website called Pro Football Focus, and I really know nothing about it. So I don't know whether it is a credible site or not. But it says that Tyson Alualu has 111 snaps, one sack, no hurries, no hits. Why is he playing so poorly?
I will say this, and that Tyson Alualu is very productive against the run.
I agree.
He has not been very productive against the pass for whatever reason. Would you like to have somebody like a Henry Melton or a Geno Atkins in there that's going to affect the passer more? Absolutely. You know, for whatever reason, he's not able to generate that, whether he's injury, whether it's ability. But to say that Tyson Alualu is not a good player is to say you know nothing about football. Because if you watch Tyson Alualu, very dominant on the inside of the line against the run, but no, the productivity in the pass rush is not there. But you know what? It's not there with any of these guys right now.
And I get that question maybe more than any other, except the questions about Gene Smith. But if Tyson's good, to play devil's advocate, why is the run defense struggling? That's the response that I get when I say what you said about Tyson.
Why is the run defense struggling?
Yeah.
I don't think the run defense is struggling that much. I mean, the way they play defense is not a defense that you would expect to dominate a running attack. They play a lot of cover two. When you play cover two, you're not bringing an eighth guy up into the box. You're willing to allow certain things against the run because you want to protect yourself against the pass. It's just a different approach. You know, so for people to say that they're terrible against the run, I go back and I say this. Look at the style in which they play.
Well, and you look at the last two games, and they've given up a pretty good chunk of yardage the last two games. But one of those was Andrew Luck, who was the leading rusher for the Colts coming scrambling. And the other was last week a 48-yard run. They gave up 138, a 48-yard punt, fake punt, which counted against their rushing total. So they only gave up 90 yards last week.
What's wrong with that?
Against the running game?
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I mean, that's where you want to be. They're not
like
the Bears.
Would I like to see DeJuan Landry up in the box more? Yes. But what happens when you take a safety and you bring him up in the box?
You give it up
over
the
top. It makes
you
delinquent over the top and on the outside.
Well, you better have a pass rusher if you're going
to
do that.
Where have they been delinquent at to start the year out? They've been without Derek Cox. They had Rasheen Mathis coming back from injury. So, I mean, people, you got to think about this a little bit schematically. In the early in the season, they played a lot of cover two to protect the corners that they were playing out there. And then now that they've all of a sudden have started to come get those two back, now they're starting to play more stuff, more man coverage, more eight in the box when they can. And it's like I said, it was effective against the Bengals with the exception of the
fake
punt.
Going back to Tyson, the problem, and it's going to be with him his whole career, is because he was the 10th pick, because Jason Pierre-Paul was on the board and he has had all the success he has had, that I think the view was, being the 10th pick, that he would be a dominant three technique. Dominant three techniques are guys who are, historically looking, are guys who rush the passer and affect the quarterback from that position. Jeff is absolutely right. If you turn the tape on, he is very, very good against the run. He takes on the double team. He'll beat the double team for a tackle. He does not get moved off the line of scrimmage. I mean, he is very good against the run.
He's their best interior run player.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. The problem with that, though, is when you get picked 10th, the expectation is different. Now, for whatever reason, I agree with Jeff here as well, whatever it is, if it's injury, if it's ability, if it's just a rut, whatever, the same production is not there in the past. That's what the fans see. Mm-hmm. That's where the stats come in, and that's what's going to affect Tyson. So he's a little bit hampered or being judged based on where he was picked. Expectations from that, what typically people view as a dominant three technique, just like, I mean, Geno Atkins, that type of player who can rush the passer. Tyson's better against the run than Geno Atkins. He plays the run outstanding, but he can't rush the passer with Geno. So, but what gets the recognition?
Right.
What pops up on the radar screen is the sacks, pressuring the quarterback, flash plays.
And I get that.
And I get it too. But I'm just saying, it's unfair to say Tyson is not a good defensive lineman.
No,
a good,
that's
because
wrong.
He is. But he's a good first and second down defensive lineman right now. He's a good guy against the run. He makes you're better with Tyson in there as part of your defense because of what he can do.
I think everybody expected when he came out that he would be have the ability to do more as a pass rusher.
Well, typically that's what
if you drafted the knee, I think he would.
And I really believe that if the knee injury hadn't happened, that he would have been certainly more effective at doing that. But the knee right now it's a reality, and I think it is a little banged up. You know, so you know, in hindsight, would you say JPP?
Yeah, but absolutely. But here's the thing: in every player that gets drafted in the first round, especially in the top 15 of the first round, if you are not a top-end player, if you're just a good player, you are judged a little bit unfairly because of where your draft position was.
Oh, no question.
And that's just reality. And Tyson was the 10th pick. And also based on who is taken after you, if they perform better in a similar position, mm-hmm. then you're judged on that. Is that fair or not?
See, people from West Virginia, he's not sensitive. He's not mad at Buscelli.
I love Mel Kiper.
No, but I mean, that's just reality. That's what the draft has become and where you're picked. And so Tyson's going to live with that as long as he is here, a part of the Jacksonville Jaguars, which I hope he's for a long time, because he's a winning player on defense when someone tries to run the ball against you. He's
and
a winning
point
player.
Is they're better with him on the field than without him, clearly.
Absolutely they're better on the field with him. Now, on third down, do we need to get more production out of the defensive tackle position to find somebody who can rush passer?
Who can do it?
Well, I mean, if you had some ends out there that could get to the quarterback, I'd move Jeremy Mincy, and I think he's more effective from a three technique on third down. I think that his makeup will be better there than outside, but we don't have anyone outside who can
do that. Yeah, you like to be able to do that, and I think that.
But who's out? But who do you put outside?
I think Aaron Morgan's got to get more reps. I think Aaron Morgan.
He has limited reps. Well, I agree with you there. I saw it for in the preseason.
Tony, they need to get some speed on the field. Rushing
I agree.
The passer.
I agree with you, Jeff. You got to get home.
I know
just
that.
Having speed on the field doesn't do it.
But I believe
you have to get home.
The two guys are starting to earn more play time. I think Aaron Morgan is one of them, certainly in sub situation, which is pass rush. And then the other one is DeAnthony Smith. I think DeAnthony Smith has shown better in the last 2 weeks.
More explosion, more pop. You disagree?
I haven't seen it.
The reason I haven't seen it. I've seen him play better. The one person I think that I'm disappointed in. I mean, I'm disappointed in a couple of them. I'm disappointed in Terrence Knighton. I mean, Terrence lost a lot of weight. He looks great. I think his productivity is not where it needs to be. I think Terrence Knighton needs to elevate his game. I think that Jeremy Mincy, I've been disappointed in his production so far. When the quarterback's gotten out a couple times, it's him kind of losing that outside edge. I don't think he's pass rushing smart. I think he needs to be better. I think Andre Branch has disappointed in the last couple weeks, certainly against the Colts. And this past week against the Bengals, I didn't think he looked like he had pop. You know, so, I mean, obviously there's a lot of reason for disappointment when a team only has two sacks, you know, and really hasn't affected the passer very much. You know, but I think that group, I think, is certainly capable of more, and I expect them to play better this week against a weaker offensive line.
All right, time for news here as we hit the top of the hour. 60 more minutes of Jaguars this week live from Latitude 30 on Jacksonville Southside. Come join the party, folks.
Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna.
Live from Latitude 30.
Jaguars This Week.
With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lugeman. Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. And some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who? Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't All right, welcome. Handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
Welcome back to Latitude 30, hour number two, Jaguars This Week. Jaguars Bengals behind us, Jaguars Bears in front. This quick note, you may have heard, you may have seen somewhere on the internet today, that the Jaguars game that is scheduled for Sunday the 21st in Oakland is up in the air all of a sudden because of the Oakland Athletics. And they had to beat the Texas Rangers today in order to secure home field advantage. They've done that. So now here's the story. They've got a home series, Joe, that will start, what, later this week?
Probably Sunday.
Joe, jump in.
It all depends on who
you
wins.
Explain it, baseball guy.
The wild card is Friday.
Right, but there may be an extra game tomorrow if the Yankees and Orioles end up tied. They'll have to play each other in a one-game series.
But they still play the wild card Friday.
They'll play their wild card Friday, and then whoever wins that, has the lowest record, is going to play Oakland. If Oakland wins that best-of-five series, that's probably when the NFL will make their decision. Now, it doesn't, you know, if Oakland wins that five-game series and they go on and they win or lose in four games and we're nowhere near Game 7, it's not going to matter because the decision will have already been made to move us to Monday night. So after, just pay attention to the A's next series. They've guaranteed themselves that series because they won today. If they win, we're probably going to move.
What network
That's
would it be?
Just great.
What network would it be on? How TV-wise, what would they do, Joe?
They would go to ESPN, too.
Nationally, it would be ESPN.
TBS,
yeah.
I'm not sure it would be national, would it?
No. Nationally, it would be ESPN.
They put on ESPN, too.
And then it locally, obviously, it would still stay on CBS.
You're talking about our game or the NFL or the baseball game?
What do you got there, Tony?
It's supposed to be a CBS game.
But they're not going to preempt their primetime programming.
So the network, NFL Network, are there, I bet.
Well, maybe they would.
Yeah, because it used to be that just kind of went into just like local broadcasting.
But doesn't that mean CBS loses a game?
No. Locally, it would stay on that.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure it would go national, though. It didn't used to. Maybe that's changed.
Probably
I'm not sure there would be
any scheduling issues. Because you're not going to start the game.
They've done that before, and it's always been where it's just kind of showed in the local markets, and that's sort of it.
Right.
Which,
there have been some issues with that before.
Yeah.
You know what? We'll worry about it when we get there.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got bigger issues.
Suffice to say, you will not find anybody that wants to see that game on the West Coast move to a Monday night game.
No,
that's not
a feel good situation.
Yeah, no, that won't be anybody. All right, let's look forward now. Bears come in Sunday, 3-1. They're coming off of a win in which they intercepted Tony Romo 5 times, scored on 2 of them. So let's start with the Bears offense and Jay Cutler. 5 touchdowns on the year, 6 interceptions, passer rating in the mid-70s. He is more than an enigma, isn't he?
Can we talk about Baselli's vat of cobbler?
Well, here's the impressive part. I thought you guys were going to share it, but I think he's going to finish
no,
it.
There's no sharing.
I'll share with Jeff.
His nickname is Three Spoons Baselli. Go ahead.
All right, so Jay Cutler, a guy really good. He is good, but he's enigmatic.
This is good.
You don't think Cutler's good?
I think he's very good.
Okay.
But he's not as good as the cobbler.
Well, no, Cutler is really one of the few guys in the NFL that, I mean, supreme confidence, will throw it on every down if it was up to him. He doesn't care. You know, I think John Gruden actually aptly described him on Monday Night Football and said that he's a gunslinger because he really is. I mean, he's one of those guys that will just drop back and throw it and have 3 interceptions, and he doesn't care. I mean, he'll just line back up and throw it again and again and again. And he's got a very talented arm. You know, years ago when he was with the Broncos, I thought he was probably the most talented arm in the National Football League.
Remember we went out there in 2007, 2008, you said as much.
The only thing I think that's held him back is that I think at times his footwork is not very clean. And then
maturity.
At times his confidence is too much in that he thinks that he can throw a football through a quarter slot in the wall, and sometimes he tries it, crazy enough. And then Tony is right. He has been an immature player at times. But
he looks like he's growing up this year a little bit.
Let's not get carried away from one game.
Well, 3-1.
First of all, two games ago, he's pushing his offensive line on the sideline.
It goes back to the same thing.
And Sunday Monday was walking away from his offensive coordinator.
It goes back to the same thing as let's not overreact from the Jaguars game from this past week and don't overreact from 1 month. And I think with Jay Cutler on Monday night, let's not overreact to that. Jay Cutler is what he is. I mean, he still blew off Mike Tyson in the game. I mean, he still showed signs of immaturity. But he's a guy that's dangerous. I mean, he has the ability to hurt teams. And he also has the ability to hurt his own teams greatly, much like we saw when he played at Green Bay this year, and he threw 4 picks. And he was terrible. You know, so he's going to give you 3 chances in a ball game. And the Jaguars as a defense have had 7 chances in the last 2 games and have made 2 of them, and one of those 2 they fumbled.
And that really goes back all season. Even before that,
that's been a story of this team all season, is not getting interceptions when it has a chance. And if you do, it is amazing how much that can tilt the momentum of a game.
But I would say this about Jay Cutler and his interceptions. You go back to that Green Bay game where he threw four, he was under constant pressure. I think you
But Blaine was under pressure, and he threw one pick so far this year.
No,
I mean,
you know, you're missing my point, Jeff. I know he'll throw the picks, but I don't think he's going to throw the picks if he has all day to sit back there.
Oh, you're wrong. You were wrong because against the Cowboys Monday night, he had three balls in that game that could have been, should have been intercepted, and he had no pressure on any of the three throws. That's just Jay Cutler. That's the way he is. He wings it sometimes, and he takes chances, and he's going to give you opportunities, pressure or not. Now, if he gets pressured, then all of a sudden the floodgates can open.
All right, well, let's talk about the ability to get pressure. I mean, we pretty much laid it out in the last segment that this is not a team that has a lot of explosive pass rushers coming off of the edge. Tell us about the offensive line. They've got a huge left tackle in Jamarcus Webb. Not Jamarcus. Is it Jamarcus Webb?
Yes.
Jamarcus Webb. Should grab my chart. It's got the name on it. And they got a second-year guy from Wisconsin.
Shiloh, well, you're talking about Gabe.
Gabe Karimi.
Karimi.
So, I mean, two really big offensive tackles. Both
I don't think
them,
either one of them are very good. I think both of them are below average. I don't want to say they're terrible, but both of them are below average. If I were a defensive end playing this week, I would be so fired up to play against either one of those guys. I mean, I couldn't wait until Sunday to play either one of them.
So, is it a favorable matchup for what the Jaguars are going to send?
Well, I mean, I would like to think yes, but you know what?
Hard to say that.
Branch and Mincy haven't done anything in the last couple weeks that make you go, oh, yeah,
because
they're going to crush it.
It's to the point where Jeremy Mincy and Andre Branch, that combination during the offseason and during the preseason was one of the reasons that we thought this team had a chance to be okay defensively. Everybody criticized the pass rush. There were people who said, oh, no way is this team going to get a rush passer. But inside the team, people thought that those two guys were going to be able to get enough pressure to make you nervous, and neither one of them has done it yet. Andre Branch, I get it a little more because Jason Pierre-Paul got his first sack in his 11th game. It can take time for a young defensive end. But somewhere along the lines, those two guys have to create at least enough pressure to occasionally get a turnover out of this.
And to Jeff's point about the favorable matchup for us, and I think why he was hesitant to say anything, he said the same thing 2 weeks ago when we played the Colts, that this was an offensive line that we could get after.
Right. So far, they haven't shown.
And they haven't shown it yet. So that's
I think, a favorable match.
Jeff, that's probably the hesitation in your voice about if this is if this is favorable or not, because you thought 2 weeks ago against the Colts it was favorable for us.
Oh, I thought it was favorable against the Colts. I thought it was favorable against the right side against the Houston Texans. And this week I think it's very favorable not only at the defensive end spots, but also the Bears left guard, Shiloh Rachel, I believe his name is. I think I got it pronounced correctly. Is that spot for the Bears, they had one guy in there for 2 weeks, benched him, and then they now have Shiloh in there for the last 2 weeks, and he's not playing all that well. The right guard's probably the most consistent. The center's probably right, you know, second to the right guard as far as consistent play. But, I mean, they have struggled. And I think that if you don't take advantage of that against Jay Cutler, you're going to miss the boat. You know, if Jay Cutler gets on a roll and you don't pressure Jay Cutler.
Uh-oh.
Absolutely uh-oh. With Brandon Marshall, Devin Hester, and
Sean Jeffrey.
Yeah, and, you know, catching the deep balls, he can go up and get them.
You know, the only back that's really given the Jaguars trouble this year, obviously, is Arian Foster. He had a big day.
And Ben Tate.
Well, okay. The Texans running game had a really big day. You know, to a smaller degree, Adrian Peterson had a couple of key runs at key times, and you didn't like to see that. What do you see when you watch Matt Forte? And he's not completely healthy, obviously.
He's just smooth. I mean, watching Matt Forte for a number of years now, he's just smooth. You know, he reminds me a lot of Arian Foster. But I think that he's probably got a little bit more power than Arian Foster running the football. He can push the pile a little bit more, whereas Arian Foster is one of those guys that likes to glide and get through untouched. And then when he gets the contact and it looks kind of
rough for him. He's looking for a place to kind of get down safely, whereas Forte will pound it a little bit, and he's not 100%, certainly from watching him in the game Monday night, but he's getting back, you know. But I was reading today, and Brian, you probably read the same thing. There's only two backs since, from 2008 that have had over 4,000 yards rushing and over 2,000 yards receiving. And the only two are Matt Forte and Ray Rice. I mean, so obviously that's pretty special, you know, and that shows your effectiveness not only in the running game but the passing game as well.
And the big thing is Forte is certainly good enough to keep the Bears in manageable situations, to give Cutler the time, you know, take a little pressure off that offensive line, which is key, because when your offensive line has trouble pass blocking, you need to be in good situations for down and distance. And he's good enough to do that.
And obviously now we have to talk about Brandon Marshall. Just one more time. Because before we take this break, real quick. Because Marshall is different than A.J. Green, because he goes across the middle where A.J. Green really doesn't.
Well, he can do it all. You know, and I think that A.J. Green does it all too, but Brandon Marshall is really electric once he gets the ball in his hands.
He's more physical.
Yeah, and I go back to that game in which the Jaguars were at Denver, and it was Jay Cutler and Brandon Marshall. How many yards did
133, average 19 a catch.
I mean, he was phenomenal.
And
seven
catches.
And it was what he did after the catch in that game that made me go, holy cow, I've never seen a wide receiver that's this dynamic after the catch.
It was 2007. I'll never forget that
and
game.
And he still has that ability. I mean, he's not an old guy yet. He's still got that ability. He's shown that ability against the Cowboys. He caught that one ball that went across the middle, and all of a sudden he picks up. It was like a second and long or a third and long situation that all of a sudden, I mean, he's got some abilities. And when he's on his game, he's one of the top five wide receivers in the game.
Numbers back that up also. All right, Joe, we'll send it over to you to take us to break.
Thank you, Brian Sexton. Bueller Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. They're available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna rolls on live at Latitude 30 on Jaguars Radio. Well, gang, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today.
You know, we were talking earlier about you know, the Jaguars, and they could have taken Jason Pierre-Paul instead of Alualu. Can you believe that I just had somebody tweet me and tell me that they believed that they should have taken Tebow? They could have taken Tebow instead. They're still hanging on that.
Wake up.
No, we're not going to do this.
I'm just telling you.
No,
just
go on. Stop.
I'm just telling you how amazed I am to see it.
Move on.
Well, it's pretty relevant to New York this week. All right, we'll move on. What are we talking about now?
They were serious?
I know what I don't want to talk
so.
About.
or were they?
I think so. Yeah, really? I really think so. I really do.
I mean,
got the wrong guy in New
even
York.
Even the Pierre-Paul thing, I mean, I have no desire to talk about the Tebow thing, but even the Pierre-Paul thing, what's easy to forget, I was covering the draft that year.
He was a one-year
very,
guy.
Very, very high-risk guy. And I get that now when you look back, you say certainly you would want Pierre-Paul on your team. But as personnel guys, most of the time when you take a flyer on a guy like Pierre-Paul, you're sitting there in 3 years regretting it. That one worked, and more power to
him. Well, they had Justin Tuck and O.C. Uman.
They had a little bit of a luxury.
A lot of people passed on
there.
Him. Hey, what, 15th? I just wanted to point out that still somebody comes back with that, so it's not dead.
What's that,
Tebow? Thank you for pointing that out.
You got it. Just wanted to liven things up slightly. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Jaguars facing the Bears' defensive front. Gave up 6 sacks last week, did the boys. And now they get Julius Peppers and Israel Adonijé and a defensive tackle that most listeners probably have never heard of in Henry Melton.
And he is second to Geno Atkins in sacks amongst defensive tackles. Not as good as Geno Atkins, but still really good. And with the Bears defense, they have 4 defensive ends that they play, because you have Adonijé, Julius Peppers, and then a guy named Wouton, who is similar in size to Julius Peppers, but not talent. And then their first-round pick, Shea McClellan, who's a backup.
Kid from Boise.
Isn't that a nice luxury?
Yeah.
And then a defensive tackle, they have a guy by the name of what's his name?
Got my board right here.
I know, but a pronunciation chart.
P-A-E-A?
Paya.
Paya from Oregon State.
Pretty good player, but then they also have
Imobi Okoye. The guy that bench pressed 225 like 46 times?
He looks like it.
Yeah, I think he did.
But you know what it's time for along those lines? I mean, we've been breaking this down and talking about the bad matchup and how there are so many situations that on the surface you would say, boy, this favors the Bears. It's time for the Jaguars to have one of those games. Mike Mularkey's been talking about it this week, where you make plays. It's time to have one of those games where the offensive line surprises people and just gets it done. And it's time for that.
I want them to show me what I know they're capable of.
Right.
That's what I want.
And to stop talking about it.
I don't want them to surprise
me.
I want them to show me what I know that they're capable of.
Well, based on last week, it would surprise a lot of people, is what I'm saying. But it's time for one of those games where I'm walking in as a reporter, and all of a sudden the storyline has changed. We've all been with it. When I was covering you guys, it would happen. There'd be a theme all week that, oh, Ben Coleman's playing for Tony Boselli. That's a disaster. And then Benny would go in and outplay him. but you know, you get it done in a tough situation, and that's what has to get done this week. It's time for that.
All right, so what's the most difficult matchup on the offensive line? And that would be one that you could see maybe winning, and that is Julius Peppers against Eugene Monroe, right?
They'll move Peppers around.
Yeah,
a lot.
Peppers will, I bet you we see a lot of him over on Cameron Bradford.
Well, what they do with Julius is always an open side guy. So he always tries to go away from the tight end. So they try to put Adonijé on the tight end or on the tackle's outside shoulder to give Julius Peppers some space. So I don't think it's so much of them saying we want Julius Peppers on this guy when it's first and second down. But now when it gets to third down and they take Julius Peppers, they're going to put him exactly where they think he's got the best matchup.
Inside.
Well, I don't think that they'll put him over the left guard spot because I think that they have enough confidence in Henry Melton to leave him there. So I think Julius Peppers will either go to left end or right end, and we'll have to see exactly. Now, Julius Peppers seems more comfortable at right than he does left, so I wouldn't be surprised if they would let him go against Eugene and see how he does.
They have 15 sacks, and in back-to-back games – they posted 5 and 6 against the Packers and the Rams. So, I mean, this is a front that has gotten it done.
Well, they're even more dangerous. They turn those into turnovers. I mean,
and score off of them.
Sacks are one thing, but this is a defense that takes chances. I covered Tim Jennings in Indianapolis, and they ran him out of town. He's
now
leading the NFL in sack. I mean, in interceptions. And what he does is he takes chances. But you can take chances when you've got a pass rush that's being effective.
I'll give you a little preview of a number that I'm kind of talking a lot about on Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com. And if you look, and people say that it's a passing league, right? So if it's a passing league, how do you gauge defenses and grade defenses? Well, two numbers would stick out, right? Sacks and interceptions. If you look around the league, the Bears are number one because they have 15 sacks, 11 interceptions. That gives them a number of 26. The second highest team would be the Arizona Cardinals at 20. The Jaguars are at 4. Okay, so I mean.
And they fumbled away one.
And they fumbled. No. No, yeah, exactly.
Right.
But I mean, just to show you how good they are as a passing league defense, the Bears. I mean, that's a 26 number.
That's a good stat.
I mean, that's a phenomenal, phenomenal number. And to me, they're one of the best in the league because they have 3 defensive scores, all off of interceptions.
In the last two games.
In the last two games because they had one against
the Rams
in which it was their safety
right
had it. And then, obviously, the two with the corner and Briggs against the Cowboys. I mean, solid defense right there.
All right, we've reached the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we will go into the audience with Joe. News is next, Joe, and we'll be back after this on radio.
Well, you want to see the Jaguars at the best price possible? The coin toss ticket promotion. offers fans the ability to purchase up to four tickets, possibly single seats or in odd assortments, for only $20 each. Now, there are no guarantees of location or whether the tickets are going to be singles, paired, or nearby each other. It's all a toss of the coin. Information on coin toss tickets, real easy to find out. Call the Jaguars Ticket Office, 904-633-2000, Brian.
All right, Joe, thank you very much. Jaguars and Bears, it is a 4:05 kickoff on Sunday afternoon, which means we get things started at 1 o'clock here with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. Pre-game starts at 3, kickoff at 4:05. And, you know, you seem like you have a thought. You want to? Are you just holding that microphone real close?
No thought.
Okay. Just didn't want to keep you waiting.
No thought.
All right. Blaine Gabbert. Discuss. Thoughts on Blaine?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, with a young quarterback, you need to have the ability for him to grow and grow with time. And he's getting better. And he's making plays. I mean, think about last year when Blaine Gabbert had a day that people were disappointed in. What did he throw for 100 yards? Maybe. Maybe 70. Maybe 80. I mean, in last week's game, a lot of people are viewing that as a disappointing game. He threw for, 186 yards, something like that. Didn't have a lot of time, but he still threw for 186 yards. I mean, he's getting better, and I think he's fine. I think that.
Wait a second. Hold on now. I agree he's getting better. But let's not like act like in today's NFL, 186 yards is worth anything.
No, I'm not acting like that.
That is an awful day through the air in this league today.
And especially what makes it frustrating.
It's awful.
I'm not trying to say it was a great day.
I'm trying to say that if that was a bad day compared to last year, that's improvement.
But I don't think that's what people are looking at, Jeff, and saying. I think it's the culmination of the entire picture. Which I don't think is totally fair.
I'm feeling a little fanness in you there.
No, you're missing my point.
Instead of a little logic and a little calm and
I'm not being
a little evaluation.
I'll be logical, but to say that 186 yards passing is anything but what it is, which is awful.
Okay, well, before you leave that point, if it's that so awful, how many yards did Jay Cutler throw for on Monday night? And it was a phenomenal day.
No, that was a phenomenal game for the
how many yards?
For the Bears because
how many yards?
Hold on, let me finish. I never said Jay Cutler was phenomenal on Monday night. That sentence never came out of my mouth. They were a phenomenal team effort. They had 14 points.
But it's viewed that it was a phenomenal night.
By
how
who?
Many yards
I
did
I never
he throw
heard
for?
Anyone say that it was phenomenal. I've not heard one person say on any show, any TV that Jay Cutler was phenomenal. What I've heard that he was immature, walked away from his coach. What I've said is he has a big arm, and if you give him time, he can light you up with those weapons.
I thought he was pretty good Monday.
He was also playing against the one of the better defenses in Dallas as far as one of the top defenses in the NFL. Let me finish. I think Blaine is progressing. I think Blaine is night and day difference from last year. I think that Blaine has improved.
So what's your point?
My point is, if we're judging and looking at overall, you have to do two separate things. If you just take the numbers of what Blaine Gabbert is producing, it is not very good. But if you just take that,
I'm saying that it's not good enough. But I'm saying he's getting better.
No, because you're saying you're being a fan, not being logical. I'm being very logical. You have to look at the overall picture of how Blaine's progressed from last year to this year. But if you're looking at a passing offense and what we are doing and how people are viewing this team right now, 186 yards is not good. We had 220 yards of total offense.
Right.
Or 226, and whatever it was.
Fans are really tired of hearing that 20-yard progressions are progressions. And that's the problem they're facing right now.
Tony's getting tired of it too.
No, I'm getting tired. Let's call it is what it is. Right now, we have to be much better on offense. I mean, Mike Mularkey said as much in the Monday press conference. John, you were there.
Yes,
he basically said that.
I'm not saying they don't need to get better, Tony. I'm just saying is that you're reacting as if you're a fan.
I disagree with you 100%. How is it reacting as a fan of making? Evaluating the situation that right now our passing game is not very good.
They're not good. No, they're not.
Okay, well, then what is the
But I mean,
but you made it sound like he had 186 yards passing. Like we're supposed to jump up and down and do somersaults.
The only point that I was making, and you overreacted to it, was that if that's a bad day for Blaine Gabbert, that's a heck of a lot better than his bad days from last year.
See, I think that's a terrible. I think that's a nonsensical argument of saying this year's bad isn't
Dude,
as bad.
Make sure we got word check going.
Nonsensical is a word, is it not, John? Thank you.
It is a word. And it,
nonsensical or nonsensical?
Put them on alert. Nonsensical.
Nonsensical is a word.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
nonsensical
that.
Nonsensical is not.
I didn't say nonsensical. I said nonsensical.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
Sooner or later. But my point is, making the comparison is, well, they're not as bad as they were last year throwing the ball. I mean, that's
ridiculous. I didn't say that.
That's, yes, Jeff, that's exactly what you said.
No.
You said last year a bad day was 80 yards. This year, yippee, a bad day is
186. I'm saying his worst day last year, if that was 100, if it's his bad day for him on 186 yards, that's a heck of a lot better than what it was last year.
I will say this.
Team-wise.
His game the other day, it had a couple of very, very good drives, which his bad games last year did not. So that
is
progress.
Yeah, but I go back to my point. I think Blaine's
John,
progressing.
John, are you kidding me? Yeah, are you what?
I'm nonsensical.
You're nonsensical.
First of all, no.
Well, are
I
you
said the
kidding
argue,
me?
I said the argument
How can you say that?
And if
fans want to see results. They want to see improvement. They're the worst passing league in the offense, in the NFL, on offense.
First of all,
Brian, take control of us.
I'm just because that was my silly reaction.
I never said that, Jeff. You didn't listen. I said Blaine Gabbert has greatly improved and he is taking steps in the right direction. But I think it is
you're talking out of both sides of your mouth.
No,
there,
I'm
Tom.
Not. I think two different things. If you go back to the beginning of this show, I said the biggest problem with the offense right now is the up front, and you're not going to see any big numbers or any real production in the passing game until those guys block better. That's not going to happen. But I think it's a pretty weak argument to say that, you know, because we didn't throw for 80 yards, we should be happy because it's not as bad as last year. That's my whole point. Blaine absolutely is getting better. We saw it in the preseason. We've seen it this year. He is his balance, his footwork, everything is so – his pocket presence is so much better.
You and said he was terrible.
I
186
never,
yards was terrible.
I never said he was terrible. I said 186 yards passing is
I know,
not
I'm
very good.
I'm just putting words in your mouth.
But I think here's the thing. You just said he's gotten better, and he has gotten better. I think the big picture problem here, he probably can't get very much better unless things around him get better at this point. I'm not sure that he's going to be a quarterback right now who can go make plays above the X's and O's with an offensive line that can't protect him. He's probably not going to be able to run away from that and make that kind of play. He's got to have the receivers play better around him and the offensive line play better around him to see if he can take another step forward from what we're talking
about. Which goes back to the original conversation we had. If we get beat up front on both sides of the ball, we are going to not be a very good football team.
Right, which is probably the case for all 32 teams.
Absolutely. That's right. My whole point. So speaking offensively, speaking about what we need to to be more productive in the run and the pass, the five guys up front need to play better. What that does, it now allows you to get five guys out in the route instead of only two or three, because you don't have to max protect anymore.
Right. I love Greg Jones. Nobody wants to see him catch this many passes.
Mrs. Jones.
You're his
maybe.
Pro Bowl. I think it's your Mrs. Jones, Jess.
I don't know.
That's four for him. By the way, he has 8 receptions on the year. He has 8 receptions in the last 4 years before this.
He's peaking.
All right. Joe, do you want to grab a question real quick, and then we'll get our final break of the evening in?
We can do it, Brian. Bob, welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Hey, Bob.
Hi. Just curious on your opinions if Mike Mularkey quit in the fourth quarter, about 7 minutes left in the game, 4th and 5, he punted. And that move literally emptied the stadium. And I never leave early, but in that case, I just felt he gave up, I gave up, and I walked out. Your opinion.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I understand it. I don't disagree with you, and I don't agree with you. Me personally, I would have went for it on that 4th and 5. But if you kick that ball away, you still got opportunities at multiple possessions to get back in it. He just wasn't quite ready to sell the farm on that one drive and to do it. I know exactly what it was. I know the exact situation. I would have rather have gone for it on that fourth down as opposed to the next one in which he did go for it. I agree with you in that
basically
case.
By kicking there, what you're betting is that you can have 2-3 and outs by your defense.
Right.
Because if you get 2-3 and I know you had three possessions. There were 7:50 or so on the clock. You kick it deep. You get a 3-and-out. You get the ball back with, let's say, 5.5 minutes or so. You have a quick score. Mm-hmm. You can kick it deep again, and if you get another 3-and-out, you're going to have a 2-minute drive to either win it or tie the ball game with a field goal. That's what you're betting there. That's actually, in my opinion, the right play, because if you go for it there and you don't get it, you're basically saying the game is over.
It's a percentage play that
exactly right.
A lot of coaches make that same decision, and fans always hate it because it seems like you're giving up on it. Your percentages are slightly better at having a chance to win doing it that way. It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, and to give you the exact time, I mean, on that 4th and 5, there was 7:08 on the game clock. You got 7:08 on the game clock, and you punt it, and Tony's right on the money. You're hoping for a couple 3-and-outs. But for me, the way the defense was going, I would have went for it.
Well, that's the other side. You're right.
But there's nothing wrong, and it's not quitting by his decision.
Absolutely. I would never – I promise you Mike Mularkey wouldn't say, oh, the game's over. Let's just kick it. Let's get out of here.
There is no quit, Mike Mularkey. No. Trust me on that one.
I can argue Jeff's position, too. As poorly as we had played at times in the second half and not getting off the field, maybe your percentages would have been better to go for it there. But that's a judgment decision. That's not a – quit or try decision.
Right. Whether or not it was the right call, it wasn't motivated by giving up.
No.
All right, Joe, that'll do it for this segment. We'll come back and wrap it up.
You got it, Brian. When you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville locations, Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. Jaguars this week wraps up right after this on Jaguars Radio.
All right, one last segment live from Latitude 30 here on the South Side. We're here every Wednesday night, so come on by and heckle if you'd like.
Share cobbler with Tony.
He doesn't share.
You got some of it?
Tony and I split a peach cobbler.
Although, I will say I had about a third.
Liar.
And Logs had 2/3 plus ordered an extra scoop of ice cream.
That's a big third.
Johnny just saw it pass over to me. And there was maybe a third left and absolutely no ice cream.
A little scrap of cobbler.
I had to get a little extra piece of ice cream just so I could even taste ice cream.
You have been known to add ice cream.
Although
dinner.
I am tempted to get another one. Those are good.
Those are really good.
Very good. Another one?
No, right, so I'm tempted. I'm not going to.
What were you talking about, Brian?
Ice cream.
No, some number or stat or something you were pulling up from the book over there?
Oh, I was just – you mean the games this weekend around the NFL? That,
yeah, I knew you were going somewhere, but I got distracted by cobbler.
God, that sounds like a line from The Simpsons. Okay, so here are some games around the NFL this weekend for your consideration. The Arizona Cardinals.
Thursday
how bad did
game.
They look in the preseason? How good do they look now or at St. Louis?
Well, they still don't look that good offensively, but they are dominant on defense.
Yeah, because going back to that number that I talk about, you know, passing league and defensive number, they're the second team in the league with,
really good.
With a 20-sack interception combination number.
All right, so Miami's at Cincinnati.
Do we pick who's Arizona plays who?
Oh, Arizona's at St. Louis.
Oh, they'll win that one.
I bet St. Louis plays them tougher than you think.
Well, I think it'll be close because Arizona's going to play close games all year because they don't have a great offense.
I wouldn't be surprised if St. Louis won that.
Sam Bradford looks very uncomfortable.
And Arizona will make them even more.
Yeah.
Miami's at Cincinnati.
Miami is better than anyone gave them credit for coming this year. Ryan Tannehill threw for 438 yards last week. Reggie Bush is
– and Brian Hartline had 265 of them.
And – Reggie Bush is averaging like 5.5, 6 yards a carry or something like that. He's playing very well. They have one of the best run defenses in football. So
they've surprised.
They're much better. I still think Cincinnati wins. It's in Cincinnati.
Green Bay's at Indianapolis.
Green Bay.
Yes.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is going to have a field.
He's going to break out one of these. Yeah, I mean,
Clay Matthews may end up going to double digits on sacks this week.
Just a thought on the Colts and how they deal with the fact that their head coach is in a hospital suffering from leukemia.
Well, Tony, you know the Pagano.
I know the Pagano. I played for his dad in high school.
Okay,
I've known Chuck. When I was 6 or 7, I watched Chuck play high school football. Know John, his brother, who's the coordinator, very well. He's the coordinator of the Chargers, right. And his dad, Sam, was my high school coach. And great football family, great family. Chuck is a really good guy, and thankfully it's treatable.
Right,
it's
sounds
a
like.
Type of leukemia that he should recover from, but he's going to be out at least 6 weeks.
Yeah, but still, how scary
is
that?
Oh, it's terrible. Sure. It's a terrible thing. And he actually, it started in training camp where he wasn't feeling well. He thought he was just run down. And his wife actually finally got him to go get tested and found out he had leukemia.
Can you imagine? I mean, even though
52 years old.
You get told you have cancer, and they tell you it's treatable, but at the same time,
it changes.
That doesn't mean it's 100% assured that you're going to be fine.
You start viewing your mortality a little bit.
And you work different. All your, NFL coaches work all their life to get, the shot at the head gig.
But from the sounds of it, the Colts organization is going to handle it the right way. And, I mean, obviously, he's still going to be the head coach. But some people, I don't know if he'll be able to come back and coach this year. It's at least 6 weeks, I know.
Right.
They shouldn't let him.
Yeah, they should say, listen, your job's secure.
For the year.
You'll be the head coach this offseason. Take some time with your family and get better.
All right, Baltimore's at Kansas City. The Ravens,
Kansas
obviously.
Kansas City is terrible. Terrible.
I haven't seen them yet, but, boy, they're it's not sounding good. They're already talking about changing quarterback.
Yeah, yeah. Castle's really
struggling. And Baltimore is the kind of team that takes care of teams they ought to beat this year.
Tennessee's at Minnesota, and it looks like Matt Hasselbeck will be in the starting lineup with a shoulder injury to Jake Locker.
Minnesota's better than we thought.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know about Minnesota. I'm not a big believer in them. I mean, I know that they've got Adrian Peterson's back. They've got some. Couple good players up front defensively, but I'm not believing yet.
Logs isn't a believer.
Cleveland's at the Giants. You got a Giants team that's stinging after that loss to Philadelphia. Philadelphia's at Pittsburgh, and the Steelers are coming off a bye. Are you?
I'm doing that game. I think Steelers win that game as well. I'll be there heading up Saturday. Looking forward to a very good football game. I think Troy Polamalu should be back.
Yeah, they're talking about him, talking about
James Harrison coming back.
But I don't know. The Eagles won a big game.
The Steelers off a bye, I think, hammer them.
I'm not a believer in the Eagles.
I hope they don't hammer. I hope it's a good – I don't care who wins. I hope it's really, really close.
That's a Sunday game?
Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock.
Boy, I'm surprised that's not a Sunday night,
You would think, yeah, with those two markets.
4 o'clock game.
All right, Atlanta undefeated at Washington.
I could see Washington.
I'm always picking Smitty.
I'll pick Smitty, Washington too, but I think Washington wins that game for some reason. I think Atlanta's the better team, much better team, but that's a tough
– Boy, the Redskins have lost quite a bit defensively. Brian Arapko, great player.
And Adam Carricker gone, too.
Yeah, Carricker's gone, too. But when you watch the Redskins, when you watch RG3 play,
so good.
He's a great player, but I'm telling you, every play – when he runs it, you go, this is the last play that he's going to play this year, because at any minute he's taking a lot of hits and a lot of unnecessary hits.
That's a real problem long term.
And he is not going to last at this pace.
I'm going to pick the Falcons, but there's something about that game where I can see the Skins winning.
It's because the Falcons are 4-0. It's hard unless you're a great team to win 5, 6, 7 or I'm not sure Atlanta's great.
How about the Seattle Seahawks there in Carolina this week?
Wow, great game.
Okay.
It's an interesting game because, there's been
a long trip.
There's been talk in Seattle about, would they make a change at quarterback? And then I guess now they're talking that Matt Flynn has a health issue, an arm issue, and that he couldn't even be the guy if they wanted to make the change. And then the storyline with Carolina is Cam Newton still pout? So the Carolina Panthers, which many people viewed as this, they're going to be one of the elite teams. Oh, hold on a minute now.
How about Denver at New England? It's the game of the weekend if you're looking at quarterbacks.
Tom Brady.
Yeah, New England.
40 points in the second half last week, I'd say so.
Peyton's arm is not back. I don't care what anybody says.
Buffalo at San Francisco. Okay, we'll leave that one alone.
San Francisco wins that
day. That's a whipping.
San Diego at New Orleans.
New Orleans gets their first win.
And the Monday Nighter, and on paper before the season, this looked like a good one. Houston at the New York Jets. Santonio Holmes is gone.
Houston is going to embarrass the Jets.
Houston by three touchdowns.
Yes.
All right, people will be playing by the end.
Travel safely this week.
All right,
see you guys
on
Sunday.